Chapter 77. Gavin survived the noon rituals. The Laxiat, a perfectly well-intentioned young green, was shaken like a leaf through the whole thing. Garriston wasn't exactly a prime posting, so no doubt the young man hadn't expected to ever catch a glimpse of the prism, much less meet him, much less be responsible for performing the Sunday ritual with him. They muddled through, Gavin prompting the young man with his lines two or three times. It took an hour and a half, and that was with Gavin cutting short the list, beseeching Orholm's blessing on every noble in the seven satrapies and every official in the Chromeria. If even Orholm can't remember their names, maybe they aren't all that important, eh? He told the Laxiat, leaving the young man gawping. It was early afternoon before he could escape. Escape being relative, of course. He had a dozen blackguards, a secretary, four messengers, and a dozen city guards accompanying him. He went to the docks. He found Corvin there, ably directing the mess. The crowd wasn't as bad as he had assumed it would be. Perhaps people were holding out hope that Gavin would save them. Perhaps after seeing him build an impossible wall, they thought his powers were unlimited. Perhaps some were simply religiously observant. Only absolutely necessary work was supposed to be done on this holiest of days. Good thing staying alive doesn't count as absolutely necessary. Many nobles were bartering with ship captains. Boxes of goods were piled on the docks, and plenty of goods that weren't in boxes. Rolled up tapestries that must have hung in families' great halls. Furniture with gold leaf paint, artwork, a maze of trunks packed with Orholm knew what.
Lord Prism, General Danavis said, coming up to Gavin quickly. Perfect timing.
Which means you're about to hand over some truly unpleasant duty.
I gave the order yesterday that no ships were to leave the harbour in case an evacuation became necessary, and it had been known that disobedience meant seizure of the ship for the captain and death for whoever hired him.
It was a harsh sentence. But war called for harsh sentences. Whoever took a ship out of the city early was condemning dozens to death if Garriston were overrun and a massacre began. The problem with harsh sentences was that someone always tried to call your bluff. Once.
Who was it? Gavin asked.
He thought he knew already.
Governor Crassos. His men fired on the blackguards who went to stop them.
Blackguards? How'd Corvin get blackguards to obey a fetch-me-that-prisoner order? Any hurt?
No, Lord Prism.
He's here? Gavin asked.
He needed to get out of here. His entourage was blocking Corvin's people from coming and going through the street as they needed to, and they were blocking access to the docks as well. But this he wouldn't dodge. It was better to handle these things in a way that reinforced the solemnity of the law, but it was best to handle them quickly before others disobeyed the same law and you ended up having to kill more. When the sands were running out of the glass, delayed justice was as bad as injustice. Bring the sailors, too, and whatever cargo he was taking, Gavin told Corvin quietly. Governor Crassos was, indeed, barely 10 paces away. He'd just been surrounded by guards much taller than he was, blocking him from sight. His hands were bound behind his back and one eye was swelling. A motley collection of smugglers were brought forward with him, scruffy, hard-edged men who'd taken on the job knowing the risks. Gavin raised both hands over his head, throwing out a small fan of sparks. Anyone who hadn't been looking before was now.
I hereby convene this adjudication in the light of Orholm's eye. Let justice be done.
Heads bobbed all around the docks in acknowledgement of the sudden prayer. The accused were pushed roughly to their knees. Humility before justice. If I'm going to block the docks, I might as well accomplish something while I'm here.
Governor, you're accused of hiring a ship to flee the city against the orders of the general in charge. Is this true?
General? I'm the governor of this shithole. No one tells me what to do.
Not even I? Gavin asked. The general was acting in my name, given explicit authority to do so. Did you hire this crew to leave the city?
You've got 50 witnesses who'll tell you I did. So what? We helped you. My family stood by you in the war. You wouldn't be here without us.
Governor Crassus's voice trailed to a whine.
You're going to put these peasants in front of me?
Captain, Gavin said, turning away from the governor, you acknowledge your attempt to flee?
The captain looked around, defiant, unbroken, but not quite daring to meet the prism's eye. Apparently everyone on the docks had seen the attempt. He had the air of a man who knew he was going to die and wanted to die well. He was holding his courage in a tight grip.
Yes, sir. The governor hired us last night. I already wanted out.
Of course he did. Every man with a ship wanted out, and wanted out yesterday. It is an old tradition, Gavin said loudly for the assembled crowd, to grant one pardon on Sunday. As Orholam is merciful, so should we be merciful.
Oh, thank Orholam and his prism among us, Governor Krassos said, struggling to his feet. You won't regret this, Lord Prism?
Gavin drafted Superviolet for its invisibility and smacked it across the back of Krassos's knees, never even looking at him. The man dropped. Gavin addressed the captain. Captain, by rights I should lock you in a cell and leave you there to whatever fate might find you. Instead, I'm going to release you, and I'm going to give you my ship, the ship you forfeited, and your crew. I'll be watching you, Captain. Serve well. The captain looked poleaxed. Then, embarrassingly, his eyes welled with sudden tears.
What?
Krassos demanded. Governor Krassos, you have disobeyed my order and demeaned your office. A governor is to bear up his people, not weigh them down. You have stolen from the people Orholam gave you the duty to lead. You are a thief and a coward. I hereby strip you of your governorship. You wanted to take your riches and leave? So be it. Gavin selected a trunk from among those Krassos had taken with him. It was full of rich clothing, large and so heavy that one man would have trouble holding it. He shot large holes in the top, bottom, and sides. He gave orders, and guards put the trunk in Krassos's arms and then bound it to him with ropes.
You can't do this, Krassos said.
It's done, Gavin said. Your only choice now is how you face it.
My family will hear of this, Krassos said.
Then let them hear you died like a man, Gavin said. It was like Gavin had slapped the man across the face. His family obviously meant everything to him. Gavin drafted a blue platform out into the water. You wanted to flee, Lord Krassos? Go. Without hesitation, Lord Krassos walked down the steps of Blue Luxin and out onto the water, carrying his trunk. He got out about 15 paces before the Luxin cracked, and he fell into the water. In moments he was kicking to keep the buoyant chest from bobbing over his head and drowning him. The tide was just turning, so he merely sloshed back and forth, neither pushed in closer to shore nor washed out toward the other piers, or toward the Guardian and the open sea. 1,000 pairs of eyes watched him silently. In a minute he wasn't having to kick so hard to keep the trunk from pushing him under, because the trunk wasn't floating as high in the water. He was trying to stare defiantly toward the dock, toward Gavin, but his wet hair was falling in front of his eyes, and he couldn't seem to shake his head enough to get it out of them. He screamed something right before he went under. Gavin couldn't understand him. More death. He hadn't liked Krassos, hated his attitude, hated the type of noble he represented, who took, and never thought to give a crumb back. But he'd just killed a man, made enemies of his family, and this in the midst of a war that would have done the job for him. Gavin watched for the bubbles and didn't see any. Krassos had floated too far out. Gavin raised his hands and then brought them in. Orholam have mercy, he announced, bringing the adjudication to a close. He'd already spent too much time here. He turned. Behind him in the bay, a shark's fin cut the water like an arrow headed for its target.